Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Claims for unemployment benefits continue to drop in New Hampshire. Still, officials here are watching the national picture with caution as many states pause or roll back their economic reopenings due to a resurgence of virus. Meanwhile, New Hampshire recently addressed a criticism of its jobless assistance program with a new system for unemployed people, self-employed people, whose profiles don't fall into easy-to-fill-out boxes. Today in The Exchange, when Granite Staters lose work, what happens, and what's it going to take for them to get it back? Exchange listeners, we'd love to hear your stories. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. And we'll start with Rich Lavers. He's Deputy Commissioner at New Hampshire's Department of Employment Security. And we'll hear from other voices too this hour. And Deputy Commissioner Lavers, welcome back. You've been really generous with your time during this pandemic, and we appreciate it.
Hey, Laura, it's great to be on, and thank you for the opportunity to talk with your listeners.
So no state's economy, as you know, is an island. And I'd love your reaction, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, to that national picture. Six states representing one third of the U.S. economy with huge COVID spikes reversing their openings. What are the possible economic ripple effects on New Hampshire?
You know, it's interesting where we're dealing with a pandemic, and obviously our borders don't mean very much when you're looking at what we've seen around us. We're a small state in a group of small states, and until very recently, we were very close to the global hotspot, right?
Massachusetts,
but I think a lot of what New Hampshire has been able to do in terms of the messaging about the importance of social distancing, the importance of mask wearing, the importance of just those good behaviors that can help keep the incidence of COVID down, but also facilitating people's ability to comply with those types of good behaviors. And when I talk about that facilitation, I'm talking about economically with access to unemployment benefits. And I think there's been a lot of factors that have had a part to play in New Hampshire's experience thus far. You know, looking at a map just earlier this week, and New Hampshire was still looking a lot better than the rest of the country and our surrounding states. And I think it has a lot to do, again, with that messaging, access to unemployment benefits, the fact that we've been able to pay out over $1 billion in less than 4 months, Laura, which is almost equivalent to the total amount we paid out in the prior decade.
Wow.
So that's a significant lift in a very short period of time. And I think those dollars getting out into our local economy allows people the ability to not have those financial pressures to maybe and perhaps better comply with some of those requests and instructions around those good behaviors that can hopefully prevent us from seeing spikes in cases.
Well, and you're right. We spent the earlier weeks of this pandemic near a global hotspot, New York, and then Massachusetts had a big problem, although that does seem to be getting better in Massachusetts. Here's one of the economic ripple effects I wonder about, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, and you tell me. Frightening news from states far away, but still frightening news. Does that make Granite Staters more nervous to go out, more nervous to, you know, eat outside at a restaurant, more nervous to do some shopping or maybe even a little leisure activity, even though these spikes are far away?
Well, you know, it's our economies are all interconnected, right? Like I had said earlier, New Hampshire's a small state in a group of small states. And certainly the video footage and what people hear and see from other states that are seeing an increase in cases, that should raise a level of concern. And I think, as we've heard from the governor, I think that concern is a good thing. I think it helps people be humbled to what they are being asked to deal with right now. This is a heavy lift for all of us in terms of the significant changes we've had to make in our work life, our family life, just how we interact with people, how we go about doing our just what we had thought of as just mundane activities, right? With just before where you could just pop in and do a couple of errands, now you really want to coordinate all of that and you want to get it all done together and you really think through your grocery shopping trips. So I think that level of concern and what we see in other states and reminding us that we're not done, that there's still a long ways to go, and that we could see an increase in cases if we don't practice those good behaviors that have in large measure allowed New Hampshire to escape some of the spikes that we've seen in other parts of the country. I think it's a good reminder.
Overall, where does New Hampshire's unemployment rate stand right now, Deputy Commissioner Lavers? And just for comparison, what was it pre-pandemic? I know we were among the lowest in the country as of, you know, January or February.
Yeah, so pre-pandemic, when we entered this, Laura, we were at 2.6%.
Wow.
We'd been one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country for the better part of the prior 4 years. And then quickly, those numbers shifted. And we went, to give you an understanding and kind of put it into perspective, the week prior to the emergency order and the expansion of unemployment benefits, we had about 600 new claims that week and about 4,000 active claims, people that are actively getting benefits. In that first week, we had 29,000 new claims. And then the following week had 40,000 new claims. So the dramatic increase in the speed at which it hit was like nothing anyone had ever seen. The good news is that we peaked out at, or at least currently we peaked out at about 117,000 active filers in the state. We've come down to below 74,000 where we currently are. So that's a significant drop. New Hampshire's been dropping at a faster rate than the national rate of decline in those weekly claims. So that's more people going back to work. And what we saw just last week was that we had about twice as many people stop filing for benefits as started filing for benefits. So I think those are positive trends that we're seeing, but we always have to be mindful of how quickly things can change because of what the cause of all of this is a global pandemic, and one that certainly not completely under control by any means. So things can change quickly, but
yeah,
we are trending
that
in a good direction.
So what is the unemployment rate now? You said it was 2.6%, really low pre-pandemic. What is it now?
So the unemployment rate, actually, it's survey-based, and it looks at the week that has the 15th of the month. And so when we were in the thick of it in April and the March rate got released, it was still at 2.6%.
Oh, I see.
And so that quickly changed, and we then went up to 17.1%. And our May rate was 14.5%, which is about nearly three times what our prior high rate was. So that's just, that lets you, helps you understand the significance of that number. And we have our June rate will be released today. It'll be released later on this morning. So that will be the rate for New Hampshire for the month of June. But what we do know, and I think is more relevant than looking at the regular monthly unemployment rate, I think we need to spend more time looking at more high frequency metrics so that we can get a better sense of where we are currently because of how quickly things can change, but also get a better sense of where we're going. And we've spent a lot of time talking about the weekly numbers and looking at those weekly numbers as a percentage of our labor force. And when you look at that, you see that New Hampshire's at about 9.5% what we've termed a COVID-affected unemployment rate. I get to work closely with a friend of yours, Laura, Brian Gottlob here. He's our director of our Labor Market Information Bureau. Brian is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to looking at these high frequency metrics and trying to discern where we're going. And so when you look at that 9.5%, which is the amount of active filers that we have as a percentage of our pre-pandemic labor force, it puts New Hampshire in the lead for the Northeast. We're right up there with Maine in terms of the lowest percentage of our labor force that is currently actively filing for benefits. So that's a good sign.
I want to remind our listeners that you can join us with your questions or comments for New Hampshire Employment Security, especially if you've been trying to access unemployment benefits or other help with your employment situation. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477 and our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also use Facebook. And Deputy Commissioner Labors, you gave us some numbers a couple minutes ago that just show, you know, how much businesses folded so quickly and had to lay so many people off. The first week, 29,000 new claims. The second week, 40,000 new claims. It has been a wild ride, I know, for you and your staff. What have you guys learned, you know, since March, where you had to really just suddenly and very rapidly process so many jobless claims?
Yeah, it can be difficult to, while you're still dealing with such a high volume of unemployment, even though we've come down significantly. But you know, we're still at it 7 days a week, Laura. We're still processing claims as quickly as we can. We know there are many people that have not been paid as quickly as they would like, and explaining to them why that is can oftentimes be challenging. But we've had to learn how to do things differently than the unemployment program has historically gone about its business. Our bread and butter was the fact that we maintained a great network of offices throughout the state, so we were accessible to everyone, regardless of where you were in New Hampshire. And quickly, those offices that previously had provided in-person service with one-on-one meetings and workshops and explaining how the unemployment system worked, providing people with access to free computers to search for work and file their claims, all of that went away because we had to close our offices to the public in order to protect our staff from COVID so that we could maintain the health and safety of our workforce, so that the experts that we do have could be protected to continue to be able to administer the program and get those benefits out the door. So that's been a challenge in trying to communicate with the claim filing public in a way that is different than we've historically done it. So we've, in an effort to try to do that, we've stood up a new website. The underlying claim application where people file their benefits, that has stayed the same. That is one of the leading systems in the country. New Hampshire is one of 16 states with a modernized system. But what we did do was we changed the front end, the portal through which people come and enter that system, so that we could get better, more timely information delivered to them.
Well, and so it sounds like you had a physical infrastructure, pretty robust, spread out all over the state to help people navigate something that can be complicated, even in the best of times. And all that had to kind of shut down and you had to switch to something else. And it's been hard to communicate with folks. It sounds like, Deputy Commissioner Labors, it's been hard to communicate with folks about why this may be slower or why this may have to all be online, even though somebody may feel like they really need face-to-face. That sounds
like
that's
what
you're saying.
I still have a lot of conversations where people insist on coming into the office, and for so many reasons that can't happen right now. But we are, I think we've done quite a bit in terms of pivoting to better communication through our online portal. We've had a unemployment hotline that's been up and running throughout this whole ordeal, where we've received over 500,000 calls on that hotline in under 4 months, and have been provided just a tremendous amount of support from the men and women of the New Hampshire National Guard, who I was talking with General Michaelides this morning and just thanked him again for all of the support that they've been providing. And the importance of that, I think it's incredibly important that when people call into the hotline, that they're able to talk to a live human being.
Sure, it's helpful because it's confusing and people are under stress and they've, you know, lost their employment and so forth. So that definitely makes a huge difference. Deputy Commissioner Lavers, I want to bring in a couple voices into our conversation today. The perspective of different groups and how they've been interacting with the unemployment system. With us now is Arnold Micolo of Excel Connect, a language services business based in Manchester. And Arnold, great to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Laura.
Thank you for being with us. And just tell us briefly, Arnold, please, what kind of language services you provide.
So we provide interpretation, translation in American sign languages.
For in what settings, Arnold?
So in medical settings, education, legal system, as well as social service settings as well.
Oh, wow. So if someone's child is having a problem at school and, you know, English is not their first language, your employees would go into the school and help that person with that conversation with the school officials. Is that a good example, Arnold?
Absolutely. So we work with school districts. We work with social workers and as well as other services in the community if they need our services. So that's pretty much we work with folks who are English is not their first language.
So how much have your employees been able to stay at work, Arnold, given the pullback in, you know, social distancing and people not supposed to be together? So how much have they even been able to, you know, to go do what they're supposed to do?
So basically the way we work, because, you know, we really don't have the capital. You see many folks and wearing many hats. So I usually employ independent contractors do this work, yeah, 1099. But now with this pandemic, it's even harder because everything now it's remotely. And that face-to-face, you know, people have to find ways of being more creative to offer those services. And unfortunately, we didn't have the capacity. So we stuck more just doing document translation and less of face-to-face interpretation.
Document translation. Okay. And for example, going into healthcare settings, I know interpreters are important too. But I was in a healthcare setting just the other day and they said, now no one's with you, right? Because it just has to be you. So how has that worked out for the people who work for you, Arnold?
So it's difficult. It's very difficult. I mean, the closest we came in to try to work with hospitals is over the phone. You know, if that's a possibility, the client has access to phone and the interpreter has access to phone, they'll do a three-way phone call. And the interpreter will relay the message to the doctors or the medical provider, and there'll be just that three-way phone call. But what's missing really is that, you know, face-to-face, you know, when you have a person, you can see their emotions, they're telling you where they're feeling pain. Right. So that's like some of the challenges of, you know, using over the phone interpretation. But, you know, a lot, just like a lot of businesses, we had to adapt and we had to make sure that we're still providing those services because they're very essential.
So what's the status, the employment status now, Arnold, of the people that you used to contract with and yourself? Are you guys working? Are you working full-time, part-time? What's going on there?
It's a day-to-day. You know, we're trying to take it day-to-day because, you know, you have businesses coming with you, coming for their document to be translated. But that's just a small portion. You know, the interpretations really is our bread and butter. So just not be able to support our interpreters and not be able to have the capital, the safety net to pay them for this pandemic. And they have been really a low increase of our services as well. So that has affected us and it has affected our interpreters as well.
Have they accessed unemployment insurance?
So unemployment insurance, a lot of folks found it to be difficult to even go through the process. So, you know, and when they go through the process and they've applied, especially at the beginning, it was really difficult. You know, people are going 3 weeks without getting a paycheck. So instead of waiting for 3 weeks and, you know, when you're the main provider, a lot of folks were, you know, choosing to apply for other jobs. You know, I had interpreter calling me and say, hey, now I'm a security guard, you know, or I'm working in a healthcare setting, you know, has a LNA, because you know, the unemployment is taking longer, but also the process is longer and they have to provide for their family immediately.
What's your own situation, Arnold? Are you saying back at work is kind of funny because you're the sole owner of your business, but
right.
Are you considering yourself unemployed or partially employed, or what's your status?
I'll consider myself unemployed, although I have my own business, because oftentimes money that we get, you know, go back in the business. And
sure.
That has definitely been very low, especially with the moment. So I'll go back. I go in my office every day and just trying to get more business clients. But oftentimes, that income, I'm not getting any income as far as, you know, getting a check week by week, so to speak.
So in a moment, Arnold, we will talk with Deputy Commissioner Lavers about a new program that the state started, really reaching out to self-employed people like yourself. Are you aware of that? Have you looked into that?
Yeah, I'm well aware of that, and I've actually applied. So I'm here. I'm waiting to hear back and see what's going to be the outcome. But you know, I don't think a lot of people actually know about this, and that has been some of the challenges with these funds that have been given away by the governor. Is that the way this information are being disseminated in the community? Language barrier and information access has really stopped a lot of people from even knowing or even being aware of the existence of these resources. So
all
it's
right.
Only a few folks would really know about this and they're actually applying for it.
Well, Arnold, it's good to talk to you and good luck. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
That's Arnold Micolo of Excel Connect, a language services business based in Manchester. Full disclosure, he helped with some of NHPR's Spanish language programming. So perfect segue for you, Deputy Commissioner Lavers. Tell us about this new support system or new program for self-employed Granite Staters like Arnold.
Yeah, so it's a opportunity that the governor announced a few weeks ago. And I think what we just heard from Arnold, I think, underscores the importance of how much the governor has been getting out during his press conferences, right, and trying to get that information out there. So he's been able to talk about this new program during several of those press conferences. Information is up on the state's website. So it's the SELF program, Self-Employment Livelihood Fund. It launched last week, where individuals that are self-employed without any employees and have been engaged in self-employment are able to submit an application online. They have until this coming Friday at 4 p.m. to get those applications in. And then we're going to be looking at the applications that come in together with my department, the Department of Revenue Administration, the Gopher team, as well, and we'll be processing those applications as quickly as we can to get awards out the door to help with those self-employed individuals that perhaps haven't been able to access some of the other grant funding that has been available through the CARES Act Flex Funds. And to some extent, maybe some of those individuals also haven't been able to access unemployment benefits up until this point. Even though it's been available for self-employed since the beginning of the pandemic. And we can talk a little bit more about their ability to access unemployment, but it's another program with these grants to provide some relief and support for our self-employed individuals. And really those small businesses are the backbone of New Hampshire's economy. We've talked about that quite a bit. And it's another opportunity for them to obtain some support to help them get through the COVID pandemic that we're all dealing with day to day.
And again, the deadline for that special self-employed assistance is this Friday. So a limited
Friday,
window there.
4:00.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We have a lot more to talk about, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, but we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we'll go to some of the emails that have come in. And Exchange listeners, we invite your questions, of course, to exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org, or your phone calls at 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, an update on New Hampshire unemployment. Our guest for the hour is Rich Lavers, Deputy Commissioner of the New Hampshire Employment Security Department. And listeners, let's hear from you. How has the ongoing pandemic affected your work? And have you accessed some of the unemployment help that's available? Let us know. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. And here's a question from Michael, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, who says, can you ask your guest to discuss the role the expansion of unemployment benefits had on unemployment filings and also what effect the school closure has had on unemployment, i.e. how many people list providing childcare on their unemployment filings? Michael, thank you for the question. And two sort of questions inherent in that, Deputy Commissioner Lavers. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good points there in that caller's question. First of all, I think when you look at the similarities and the differences between the current expanded pandemic unemployment program compared to the unemployment program that's traditionally existed, I think you get a good sense of why the numbers of people filing have exploded such that they have. First of all, most of the reasons that are related to the pandemic and are allowing people to file for unemployment benefits really would have been previously treated as a voluntary quit, where the unemployment program has traditionally been available for individuals that are unemployed through no fault of their own. And except for a few instances where you can voluntarily quit and still access benefits, that has traditionally not been available. But here, because of the nature of the pandemic and the impacts of it on people's ability to go to work and with the stay-at-home order, someone who was voluntarily quitting for one of those reasons related to the pandemic was able to access unemployment benefits. Similarly, in the past, you've had to demonstrate a certain attachment to the labor market through having sufficient earnings during what we call your base period. So during four quarters, you need to have a certain amount of earnings in order to have previously qualified for unemployment benefits. And that went away as well. So that, again, opened up the pool of people that could file for unemployment. And with what we just talked with regarding self-employment, that was another significant expansion of a group that previously was not eligible for unemployment benefits, but now is. So those changes to the program really expanded eligibility. But one thing that hasn't changed, and I have conversations with individuals each and every day and just trying to reinforce this, is that the unemployment program is still eligibility based. So it's not a program where you can come in and be initially eligible and you get, say, 26 weeks or 39 weeks of benefits. You need to certify as to your eligibility each and every week. That's federally and state required. And one of the big components of that that somewhat gets lost on the claim filing public because of the dramatic changes that have been made is that in 99% of the cases, you still need to have been working. You still need to have been attached to the labor market.
Beforehand.
Currently, correct. So beforehand, a good point. And you currently need to be unable to work because of one of those articulated COVID-related reasons. As the caller had mentioned, one of those being because you need to stay at home in order to take care of a son or daughter or household member because their school or childcare options that you would normally rely upon so that you could work. That's an important feature there that are unavailable. So it's not just that childcare is unavailable. It's that the childcare that you would have relied upon in order to work, so you need to have been working, that needs to be unavailable.
That's interesting. So you'll be watching pretty carefully then, folks at your department, the coming announcement about, or coming guidance as to how schools will be reopening or not reopening, and if it is sort of a hybrid model or a day-by-day model where kids don't go in every day, that could have repercussions on your department, Deputy Commissioner Leavers, it sounds like.
I think it certainly could, and also on me personally as a father of two. So certainly be listening to that and wanting to see what's going to happen come the fall.
Wow. All right. Well, lots of listeners who want to jump in. Thank you for that email. Let's take a call. This is Jason in Keene. Hi, Jason. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Yes. Hello. How are you all this morning?
Go ahead, Jason.
So I am calling because I've been trying to work with the unemployment system since early May. I'm self-employed. My wife and I are business partners. And I've had zero luck. I just get denial after denial. I can't get anybody to call me back. I've sent emails. I've made phone calls. I keep being told that a supervisor will call me back. They never do. And I've been staying home to take care of my children since March. And I'm getting nowhere. Our business is currently open. Like I said, my wife and I are business partners, but we're 50-50, and we're down that income that I'd normally bring in partnership with her.
Sure. What's your business, Jason? I'm just curious. Yeah.
We're actually in finance and asset management, mm-hmm. and we do things, you know, write life insurance, work with small businesses with their finances, with individuals, couples, things like that.
Well, Jason, it's good to, go ahead.
So what's frustrating about it and what's going on is that our business model and our taxes look a little unconventional because we file jointly and things like that. And I can't get anybody to call me back to help me talk through. They just deny me.
Jason, hold on and we'll try and get your information and maybe we can pass that on to the Deputy Commissioner's staff later. But for now, Deputy Commissioner Leavers, I'm wondering how much this new outreach to self-employed people might help people like Jason and his wife.
Yeah, so Laura, first of all, thank you for taking the initiative there to get Jason's information so he and I can connect later on today. And my apologies to him for any sort of frustration that he's experienced with the department. You know, I think that's something with the new SELF program, that self-employment grant program. I think, you know, Jason should really take a look at that and get on nh.gov and look at some information there to see if he qualifies. That's an opportunity for him. And with regard to his unemployment benefits and generally unemployment benefits for the self-employed, One struggle for the not only the New Hampshire unemployment system, but nationally and trying to bring self-employed into the program is that historically they haven't been part of the program. And there's good and bad that comes with that. For the self-employed, part of the good has been that they haven't had to report their earnings to agencies like Employment Security in the past. The bad, when you go in to access unemployment benefits, is it becomes a little bit more difficult for us to know exactly what to base your weekly benefit off of, right?
It's complicated.
Yeah, so if you're in traditional employment, your employer reports your wages every quarter. If you come in and you have a qualifying separation, you can collect unemployment. We look to see what your earnings are. And then we go to that part of state law that tells us, okay, this were your earnings during that four-quarter period. This is the amount of your weekly benefit amount. With self-employed, that can be challenging, not only to get the accurate amount, but we also want to guard against any sort of abuse and fraudulent activity that could be out there as well. So we require that self-employed validate their earnings by providing us with a copy of their 2019 Schedule C as filed with the IRS. We need that information again in order to determine what their weekly benefit amount is going to be. So I think that's part of the conversation they'll be able to have with Jason, is to try to get that information, process that through our team that is handling those requests, and get Jason the amount of benefits that he may in fact be eligible for.
All right. Well, Jason, I'm glad you called this morning. And again, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange at nhpr.org. And as we talk with Deputy Commissioner Lavers, we're bringing in other voices into our conversation, other people who have worked within the unemployment system. Joining us now on the phone is Clement Kigugu, Executive Director of Overcomers Refugee Services. And Clement, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
How much have the refugees that you work with, Clement, how much have they been able to get back to work?
So, you know, many people have been called to go back to work, especially those who work in hospital, manufacturing, and hospitality industry. So, you know, they have been called back to work. But we have, you know, several categories of people. So there are some people who are really eager to return to work. Because some have been see their PTSD worsen while the cousin at home and unable to move freely.
And so second, sorry to interrupt, Clement. So just to clarify, some of the refugees you work with are thrilled to go back to work because their PTSD from their experiences got worse while they were, you know, stuck at home.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So go ahead.
So
yeah.
when they go back to work, they feel really, you know, happy to interact and see other people. And second, they're happy to see their job secured because they were worried that if they, you know, the business is open again, they will not be able to go back to their work.
Sure.
So they were worried to start, you know, looking for a new job. So when they are called back, they're so happy. So the second category is the people who are, you know, struggling to how they're going to take care of their children, especially the single mom who, you know, their children were staying in their care or they were able to go to camp, but now there's not really a camp around or daycare. So it became difficult for them to, you know, found a place where they can leave their children. So the other category is concerned about the people, the environment. So where the people go back to work and they're worried about the COVID-19 because it endangered them to, you know, bring the COVID-19 to their family.
Is the workplace safe they're worried about?
Yes, yes. So the other situation or difficult involving is the carpool. So most of the refugee, when they go to work in some places, so they carpool. So it's difficult now for people to maintain the mentorship program. So, you know, there's no way for them to keep the 6 feet when they're sitting in some small car.
Oh, that's interesting. So many refugees don't drive because they just got here and it's hard to get a license. So they carpool, but then if a worker who doesn't drive is called back and his or her carpool driver is still at home. There's nobody to drive that person. Of course, public transit has been definitely reduced, if not shuttered. How much are the refugees you work with, Clement, able to access unemployment insurance if they aren't able to go back to work?
So, I mean, some of them, we really were overwhelmed. We had more than 80 people that we were helping with the initial application, also, you know, the weekly fire. So, you know, they're really struggling to navigate the system due to language barrier, not having computer skills. Some of them didn't even have the email address. So we have to create an email address. Even if we do it, you know, it was hard for them to manage their emails. And when they get the notice from unemployment security, you know, some of them were just because they don't know how to read and respond to their emails. So this delayed their benefits. And the other issue that we were really facing was the area verification. So when they send a document where they are not a citizen, so they have to ask them to provide either a green card, license or ID or social security number.
And oh, there's a lot of bureaucracy then. Yeah. A lot of paperwork and a lot of bureaucracy. So that's where you come in, Clement, right? That's what you guys do at Overcomers, is you kind of
work through that. That's how we really help them. And we're lucky to have, you know, volunteer and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation give us some money to hire the interpreter to work with the volunteer who were helping us to, you know, help the client to do every weekly fire and help the client to manage the system.
Well, Clement, and, it's good to talk to you. And I'm going to ask Deputy Commissioner Lavers about some of the things you raised, including language barriers. But for now, I really appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Clement Kigugu, Executive Director of Overcomers Refugee Services. And Deputy Commissioner Lavers, we talked a little bit about this when we talked with Arnold, but how much capacity does the state have to reach people who might be eligible, you know, those workers who are in hospitality or restaurants or whatever, but they can't access the website to get help, as Clement told us, due to internet issues or just the documentation is overwhelming? I understand that you guys have been feeling pretty overwhelmed too, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, but I just wonder how much capacity, how many people do you have to help you work through people like the ones that Clement works with who, you know, are having a hard time getting the benefits that they deserve?
Yeah, that's some great points that Clement made, and thanks to him for all of the work that he's done in helping those individuals and their ability to access the unemployment system. So access is key and very important to us, and even more important during a time where communication can be difficult. Although I had mentioned earlier that our offices throughout the state have been closed to the public, our staff have still been coming in, working in our offices in order to be able to answer questions from individuals that come through that are not maybe able to be answered on that first tier by someone who hasn't previously worked for the department. So they get elevated to an expert who can handle those questions. And part of that expertise that our local office staff have is that we have historically been able to provide multiple types of translation and interpretation services. Currently, the most important feature that we have is our telephonic interpretation that we have. So when an individual who calls into the hotline selects the option for those that do not speak English as their primary language, that brings them to one of our staff that is in one of our local offices. We find out the language that the individual primarily speaks. We bring in an outside language interpreter to be part of that telephone conversation in order to be able to answer those questions and provide those services. And if it's taking a claim from that individual, we will do that over the phone. If it's just simply answering questions or helping with a notice that they just recently received, we can also do that over the phone. So we're able to provide that telephonic interpretation for folks calling into the hotline. And we're also able to provide quite a bit of document translation that's available on our website on nhes.nh.gov. Folks that go onto that, they click on the document translation links, they can be linked to our most common documents in multiple languages. The primary language that we deal with is Spanish. Probably about 90% of our non-English speakers that are calling in looking for services are Spanish speaking. We have those documents up on our website, but primarily it's that hotline that's been so critical to maintaining communication that is available for our non-English speakers. We have those options. And in some cases, we're fortunate to have multilingual staff that can provide those direct translation services. And in other instances, staff that do not speak the caller's language, they are able to call in an interpreter who does, and we bring them into the conversation.
Well, and Deputy Commissioner Lavers, I got a couple questions from listeners that we will go to after a short break about the idea of workers who have been called back to work but don't feel safe doing so. I know that's something that Clement raised, and got a couple listeners who are concerned about that as well. So we'll talk about that after a break. Also, a little bit more about the interplay between federal benefits and state benefits and some of the news there. Lots to talk about after a short break, so stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, an update on New Hampshire unemployment. Our guest for the hour is Rich Lavers, Deputy Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Employment Security. And listeners, it's been great to hear from you. Your questions and comments are welcome. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. And Deputy Commissioner Lavers, Margot wrote in earlier, who says, I was working from home as a community health worker, which was very doable, but then the hospital I worked for pressured me to come back and work in the doctor's offices. Margot says, I wasn't comfortable with that and had a doctor's note supporting it. Now I am unemployed. Margot says, some employers just don't care. What about this, Deputy Commissioner Lavers? Clement mentioned it too, some people being called back to work, and that's good that their jobs are available, but they feel it's unsafe. Maybe they're taking care of someone with a compromised immune system. Maybe they work in retail and, you know, a significant number of customers aren't wearing masks. So health officials tell us that that increases the risk to the retail workers. So what do the rules say about that, Deputy Commissioner Lavers?
So, you know, where we are right now in terms of the stay-at-home order expiring back on June 15th, the reasons for being able to access unemployment to a large degree remain the same. Individuals who previously had been looking to file for benefits because of compliance with the stay-at-home order, that reason went away. But anybody who has been on the unemployment system and has filed their weekly claim, they know the number of questions that we ask of them each week to see whether or not each type of COVID-impacted scenario applies to them and would provide access to unemployment benefits. So for instance, with your caller, for someone that has been advised by a healthcare provider to stay at home or to quarantine, that type of situation still allows you access to unemployment benefits. So if you are an individual who is taking care of a school-aged child, as we talked about before, and your childcare options that you would normally rely upon are not available, and that is preventing you from going to work, that's another reason for being able to access unemployment, in addition to all of the other scenarios described on our weekly claim, where if we still have situations where your employer could be temporarily shut down, you could be caring for a household member that is infected. You yourself could be infected. So really a large menu of options for helping people in those situations impacted by the pandemic, and the impact prevents them from being able to work. That's the key there, Laura, that the impact prevents them from being able to work and they were previously working. So there's still a lot of options for people to access benefits, but
how do you,
just out of a, yep, sorry, Laura.
Go ahead. Well, I'm just curious because we have heard, you know, from some businesses that they're concerned that the rules are too easy and that it allows people to just say, nah, I don't feel safe and stay home and continue to collect benefits. So does your department, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, get involved in those sort of disputes like the one that Margot describes? Work called her back. She said, I don't feel safe. Now she's unemployed. Is that really your job to sort through who's in the right? Or do people have to go to the lawyers if they have those kind of disputes?
That's one of our critical roles.
Wow.
And that's how we getting back to the importance of being an eligibility-based program. We need to make sure that for each week that someone is filing, that they are in fact eligible. And so if we have a situation where an employer notifies the department that they've called someone back to work, we are required by federal law to look to see what the underlying reasons are for that person filing. Because not in all cases is the person going to be ineligible for benefits. So if the person was certifying on their weekly claim that the reason that they were not working was because of a temporary employer shutdown, and their employer has called them back to work, then that person, if that were the only reason they were filing, they would not be able to continue to file for benefits. But however, if they were, again, taking care of a school-aged child, or they were quarantining at the advice of a healthcare provider, then they would be in a situation where they would be able to continue to collect unemployment benefits. But we need to look at each and every one of those situations. And, you know, there are times with the volume of that type of review can be difficult to keep up with. That's why we've continued to maintain such a high degree of work here at the department, working 7 days a week for the past 4 months to try to keep up with all of those issues so that when those come up, we're able to review them quickly and we're able to make a decision so that individuals that should continue to be able to collect are able to do that.
Those sound like some really thorny disputes that you get involved in there, Deputy Commissioner Lavers. I mean, everybody these days seems to have a different definition of, you know, what's safe and how they feel about it. And I'm especially thinking of people, again, who work with the public in retail and so forth. Maybe they're not quarantining, but maybe they don't feel safe going into a place where, you know, customers aren't masked. So how do you do that? That's really hard.
Yeah,
it's a matter of, it's an interpretation.
Well, we know that just a generalized concern is not sufficient for someone to qualify for unemployment benefits. Your reason for filing needs to be attributed to the pandemic, and it has to be because of that reason that you're unable to work. And those reasons are articulated on our website and on the weekly claim form. And those are the reasons that are directly pulled from the Federal CARES Act.
I see. So there's specific rules around that.
There are specific rules, and there are still guardrails on the program, despite it being broadened tremendously in terms of who is eligible. There are still limitations on that, and we always get back to you need to have been working, and you need to currently not be able to work for one of those articulated pandemic-related reasons. And in those cases, you'll be found eligible for benefits.
Well, we've got a couple questions from listeners about the federal unemployment benefits. Don writes, any word on the federal aspect of the unemployment funding getting extended? So, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, before you answer Don's question, just remind us what the federal government has been doing and you know, chipping in extra and how that is supposed to go away, I think, at the end of the month.
Yeah, so there were several programs as part of the CARES Act that the federal government providing support and direct benefits to individuals eligible. So the biggest one of those that folks have are aware of is the $600 benefit that has been added on to individuals' base benefits since the beginning of April. That is currently scheduled to expire at the end of this month. The final week of eligibility for that $600 payment here in New Hampshire would be the week ending July 25th. I don't know whether or not Congress is going to do anything to extend that, but right now our expiration date is July 25th. But an important distinction to make there is that while the $600 benefit is currently scheduled to expire absent some further action from Congress, the broadened eligibility for folks that are essentially voluntarily quitting employment due to one of those articulated COVID reasons or those self-employed, that broadened eligibility, that stays around through the end of the calendar year. So those two elements of the CARES Act are separate and distinct. So the increased benefit is set to expire, the broadened eligibility that sticks around through December 31st.
Very interesting. And Don, thank you for the question. Real quickly, Deputy Commissioner Lavers, Maybe we could talk about this for a whole other show another day. What does the department have in the works in terms of enhancing employment in the Granite State? We've talked a lot about unemployment, but just in 30 seconds or so, could you just tell us what you guys are doing to enhance jobs here in New Hampshire?
Yeah, and I spent the first 10 years here talking about getting people back to work, and the last 4 months have been all about access to benefits.
Right.
And what we're trying to do here is pivot and help people get back to work, access those jobs in a pandemic-friendly way. We're going to be launching a new recruitment portal that's going to be accessible on our website at unemploymentbenefits.nh.gov, connecting individuals looking for work with employers that are hiring in a simple, streamlined, easy way. That will soon become available. And we're also partnering with the New Hampshire Tech Alliance and the New Hampshire Department of Business and Economic Affairs on scheduling a whole series of virtual job fairs.
All right.
So the new virtual job fairs could be the new norm for us, and we're gonna try to get these up and running again to try to provide a face-to-face connection between job seekers and those hiring employers.
Well, we will talk about that the next time. For now, we will wrap it up. Deputy Commissioner Labors, thank you very much. You've been generous with your time, and we appreciate it.
Laura, always great to talk with you.
That's Rich Labors, Deputy Commissioner of New Hampshire Employment Security. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.